You are listening to the Novel Universe Podcast, a monthly YA lit podcast hosted by Dawn Abrin and Elise Martinez, YA librarians from the Chicagoland area. Each episode features reviews and rants on new and upcoming YA books. We are here to help you navigate your TBR pile, what's good, what's bad, and everything in between. I'm Elise, the rejecter of romance.
And I'm Dawn, the criticizer of books.
So turn up the volume, here we go.
Let's do a different take on the unpopular opinion tag.
Love it.
So, we're pretending like we didn't plan this, but we kind of did already. I just don't know what her answer is. She doesn't know mine. So, what is the character everyone loves but you don't like? And I don't know her answer. Yeah. She doesn't know mine. And
we've decided and then, to omit the word hate because
So, I don't know what she's going to say, and then I'm either going to agree or...
like vehemently reject.
Yeah.
Since you're the criticizer of books. Exactly. And all things. Okay, so the unpopular opinion that I hold is I am not the biggest fan of Ron Weasley.
Oh no! Everybody hates on Ron. Ron is a great character, and here's why. Because he's unassuming. You think he's just... weenie, and he just gets bullied, but he sticks up for Harry. He's the comic relief. They are best friends to the end. Like, he helps him with at the end in finding the stuff.
Yes,
why does everybody hate Ron so much?
I don't know. I'm just
because he's poor.
Oh no, that's horrible. I don't know. His insecurity gets to me a little bit, and I'm totally not making any kind of statement about J.K. Rowling's character development. Ron is a wonderfully writ character. He's just not someone that I ever really was like, oh, it's Ron, he's in the scene, yay, you know what I mean? For some reason, I just found him, like, he is a wet blanket.
He's not!
He totes is. Until, like, the end of the season. I'm sorry, good God, series. I've been watching too much TV. Yeah, I don't know.
In the very first scene in the first movie, like, Draco, like, is his Draco self, and Ron, like, shut up, Draco, and...
Is that in the book?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember.
I don't know, maybe not. because in the book, Harry and Draco meet way earlier than Hogwarts.
Yeah, yeah.
When they play, the first time they do have Quidditch practice or flying lessons, and he's like, shut your mouth, Malfoy, like, he really...
I didn't feel the love with from J.K. Rowling towards Ron in the books. And again, like, I'm glad we weren't, like, characters you hate, because I don't hate Ron. I understand his purpose, and he is a good friend to Harry, and, like, there's a lot of good things to say about Ron. I don't feel it.
Well, Weasley is my king. I love Ron Weasley.
I know. I was like,
whatever.
Oh, she's going to have feelings about this. All right. So who is yours?
Okay. So mine, once again, like you said, I don't hate him, but I...
It's a man. Okay.
I don't like Rowan from the Throne of Glass.
Oh, okay.
I prefer Dorian a lot more. I think Rowan is a snooze fest. I mean, he loves her whoop-de-doo. I'm over it.
I can understand that. I liked Dorian. I was team Dorian until Rowan was introduced to the plot in Era of Fire, third book. And there was something about, for me personally, there was something about the way that Sarah J. Maas decided to develop their relationship that I found very... I love the hate-to-love trope.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. I'm a sucker for it. It gets me just about every time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what she did here. Spoilers if you haven't read the series. It's too late for that. The series is old as hell. I loved that he went into... I don't like insta-love. As you know, I'm the rejecter of romances. I fucking hate romances in books. I don't often think that it's necessary, and YA overuses them.
Agreed.
So, it totally caught me off guard, I guess, but then at the same time I was like, oh, I love this trope, yay. When they were first introduced to one another, he had already done the romance thing. He already had a mate. She was dead. They were like, wasn't she pregnant with his child, or was that somebody else?
I think so.
It was intense. It happened. It was over. He was not interested in being anybody else's, like, because you're only supposed to have one mate in this fantasy world, whatever. Long story short, they helped each other overcome their trauma and break down walls, and I just thought it was really well done, and she fucking got me.
I mean, yeah. I agree. I felt the heat in the Queen of Shadows, I think it was.
Yes, all the tension.
But he was just not a well-developed character. Like, everything was about her and not about him.
I will agree with you.
And it just got old, especially in the last book.
Yes, 100%. And we will go into that a little bit more in a separate podcast. But yeah, I remember mentioning that there were certain characters in Kingdom of Ash that I felt she was done developing. And Rowan was 110% one of those characters.
Most definitely.
Yeah. I didn't like that. But again, opinions will be shared in different podcasts. All right. Yeah. Okay.
So let's go into our October pubs, what we read in October.
As the year comes to a close, the good books dwindle.
Oh, for sure.
So if you are not a reader that is, like, reading with the month, or, like, here's January, I'm reading January pubs only, then, you know, you're probably like, oh, I didn't realize that, because I'm still, you know, reading Sadie, which was published in September or whatever. So usually around November, we're like, oh, what else can we podcast about? So this will be our last, like, wrap-up, book wrap-up, and then we'll go into other things for December. So why don't you start?
We'll do first best and worst.
Yes, we always do our, like, favorites and least favorites, and things get...
Yeah.
Things get bitchy. I love that you will laugh.
I read 1, 2, 3. Mm-hmm. 3-something. 4 books. the first one I read was Grim Lovelies by Megan Shepherd. I DNF'd it. I always say that I don't like to star DNFs. Do you star DNFs?
I do not star DNFs.
For some reason I did. And I don't like to star them because I didn't finish it, so I should not be able to give an opinion on a book I didn't finish.
Yeah.
But for some reason I did star it and I gave it a 1. So
how far into the book were you?
I was about halfway.
If I DNF a book at like 3/4, I'll give it a star because I read the majority of the book.
Okay.
If you have not gotten to your climax and started to resolve it yet, I'm not going to keep reading. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But like almost halfway, I probably wouldn't star.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Grim Lovelies has a good premise. It's an alternate universe where animals can be turned into people called beasties. I don't know how I feel about that. Anouk Sherman.
Sorry, I'm shaking my head like you.
It's witches. So Anouk's master is a witch and she's murdered. And her friends are looking for the killer. So first of all, the witch is supposedly this horrible, horrible person. She's supposed to be a villain, but Megan Shepherd does not develop her enough for us to care when she dies. Either way, whether we're like, yes, yeah, she's dead, or, oh, she's dead, there's no feeling. And so that was a big problem. And then it was just a major snooze fest. But one of the things that I found particularly horrible is, so they're in this, like, Paris town, and Anouk is, like I said, she's never been out of the house. I don't know what she started off as, or maybe a mouse, I don't know. And so she's out for the first time, and there's this like shopping montage, you know how they do in movies where the music is playing and they're trying on clothes. So they're at this really expensive mall and she's trying on Gucci and Giuseppe, and she's just name dropping all these labels for no reason. It doesn't come back in the plot. It does not drive the plot.
Do you know who Giuseppe Zanotti is?
I don't know. I doubt it.
I didn't.
It's like dropping all these labels for no... And it does not advance the plot. It doesn't impact the plot. Mm. Like, what is the point? And at that point, I was donezo. So, I would not waste my time on the Grim Lovelies. How are you?
I wanted to read that one. Because it has a really good cover. I have enjoyed Megan Shepherd's other books.
Yeah, I have too. That's why I read it.
Yeah, right. She hooked you. She is kind of obsessed with this idea of, like, anthropomorphizing animals and, like, it's interesting.
Yeah.
You just gotta
maybe she wants
it.
To be Frankenstein.
Maybe. All right, so my first October read was a teen nonfiction book, which is about a subject that I'm not, like, I'll just get into it. It is Period Power, a Manifesto for the Menstrual Movement by Nadia Okamoto. The reason I decided to pick this up is because it is written by a 20-year-old Harvard student who has done so much in her life. She has, like, run for city council in her hometown in Massachusetts. Again, she's at Harvard. She's a sophomore at Harvard. And at one point in her life, she found herself in a transient home situation. Her father lost his job. He lost his job, and they were kind of, like, going back and forth between various families' houses, and she realized that being relatively homeless, not having immediate access to menstrual products, really became an issue of, like, health and safety. And when I read the premise, I was like, I never thought about that. Mm-hmm. Never thought about that, unfortunately. And so she shares her experiences, then going to homeless shelters and kind of asking homeless women, what do you do? Like, how do you stay safe? How do you, and they're like, I don't know. I just try to deal with it. Like, apparently homeless shelters don't always have period products. And their reasoning, according to her book, is that people don't ask for them. So she begins to unpack the shame behind menstruation, where that shame comes from. She delves into everything: politics, religion, socioeconomic issues, cultural background issues. I learned so much from this book. Even if it's not a subject you're personally interested in, like, flipping through it and reading it is very interesting. She unpacks, like, legislation and, I mean, World War II propaganda that used menstruation as, like, a, like fear-mongering and just crazy things. So, yeah, this book blew my mind. I highly recommend it if you like to read nonfiction. The cover's really cool. This girl is going places. She has a lot to say about the subject, and that comes across in the book. It's very well researched, and it was really enjoyable to read. There's, like, ultimately this book is about how to safely menstruate and how to make good choices for yourself. So, like, if you're older, you don't obviously, like, need to read that entire section of, like, how to use a tampon and blah, blah, blah. But it's good for teens, you know, who may be starting that journey of their life. Or guys, too, because, like, personally, she goes on a long... What are you giving me that face for?
Because ain't no guy go reason about some
period
power.
I know, but, like, it's important for men to understand why and how women menstruate. And she goes into that in the book because that's the general reaction. Men don't need to know. But actually, men not
boys.
Knowing... Well,
I mean,
men and
I'm,
boys,
I feel like
boys become
maybe
men.
Husbands when they have to, like, or fathers of girls. But, I mean, just, like, do they... I don't want to know what their business is down there.
She makes an argument that, this, like, willful ignorance of, like, a woman's experience further fuels things like misogyny and, like, poor sexual choices. So she says the more people understand how women menstruate, why and when and whatever, not really when and why, but, like, what it means for a woman and society at large, the better everyone can make choices. And I was like, that's a compelling argument. I totally can understand that. You know, we're librarians, so, like, am I going to sit there and hand it to a boy? Probably not, but I'm going to engage him in conversation.
I feel like they would teach that in sex ed class. I mean, when I was in middle school and high school, they talked about menstruation and what it was. And
I was thinking back to my experiences. Like, when you're in middle school, the men are totally separated from the conversation. And that's a problem right there. Because it sends the message that women's menstruation is their issue only. And she argues that it's not. It also sends the message that this is embarrassing and needs to be kept quiet, and it shouldn't be, and goes into several more reasons why. And I was like, wow, you know, I never thought about it that way. So I appreciated that I really, really learned something. She changed my mentality about it as a woman. Like, I really shouldn't be ashamed of anything that happens biologically, naturally. So It was a great book. I highly recommend it if you're interested in the subject. It's very timely. So, yeah. That was more than I meant to say about it, but all right.
Okay.
Yeah.
The next book I read, which is also a DNF, was Boneless Mercies. I don't DNF books, by the way. I really tried to power through. I rarely DNF, and the fact that I did two this month was, I must not have been trying to deal with shenanigans. But this is a gender-bending Beowulf and a mega suit.
Say that five times fast. Gender-bending Beowulf? Good God.
So it's about a bunch of teens, and they're called mercy killers, or they are mercy killers, because they kill people because big one to die. And but they don't want to do it anymore because sometimes they have to kill children or poor people. And it's just weighing on them and they don't want to do it anymore. And so in several towns over, there's a beast that's loose. And somebody's like, hey, if you kill the beast, then we'll pay you money and whatever. So they decide, yes, we're going to do that. Sounds great. However, the pacing was the problem. I was a third of the way in and I ain't seen no beast yet. It's like, can we get to the beast? It's just them walking and traveling and talking, and none of the characters are remotely interesting. They all have the same voice. There are too many of them, and I don't know which one I'm supposed to care about. It was just, it wasn't going anywhere. And I kind of read that book before, and I just was not interested.
There for it.
No. So it's been on several people's like best book lists, and maybe I just didn't give it a chance. Maybe I should have kept reading until the beast showed up.
Kirkus and Publishers Weekly, I think, had both of them.
I was bored. It was really boring.
Beowulf.
It kind of reminded me of, what's that book called? The Deep? Into the Deep? Something about the Deep?
The Dark Deep?
No. Whatever.
Right. No idea.
About the Vikings.
Oh, Sky in the Deep.
Sky in the Deep.
Oh, okay.
It was kind of like, you know, girls and, you know, they're traveling in packs and, you know, they're warriors and, but it was just nothing keeping, the characters were not interesting enough to keep me interested.
Yeah, that sucks. So yet another great cover.
Yeah.
All right. The next one that I read is one that both of us read, and that is A Very Large Expanse of Sea by Taha Ramathi. This was probably one of the biggest YA pubs of October in terms of buzz. It is a story of Shireen, and it takes place in the early 2000s, after, like, a year or two after World War I. Dear God. I'm sorry. It takes place a year or two after September 11th, and it's told from the perspective of, again, Shireen, who is a Muslim American. Her parents are Iranian. They moved here to the United States, obviously, to give their children a better life, and she is a very angry character because of, obviously, all of the prejudices that she's had to undergo in her school, and she's a high schooler, blah, blah. This book is apparently autobiographical. It is an own voices novel written also by a Muslim American. We had some feelings about it.
Yeah.
There's really nothing else to say about the plot. She's interested in breakdancing. She's practicing and training with her brother and his, like, friends to compete in this competition, and she falls in love with this guy named Ocean. Yeah, it's a romance.
It's a romance.
Let's talk plot.
Okay.
I was like, oh, I keep word vomiting.
I didn't like Shireen. She, of course, like, I've spoke to this with Elise before, she's an angsty, angry teen girl.
And which, from the sound of things, would sound like it makes sense. And it does for about 5 pages. But when... So neither of us are Muslim, which is obviously why we were very interested in reading this book. I wanted to learn something. I wanted to be put in that person's experience and, you know, have my empathy expanded a little bit more, etc. But there's a scene where someone outside of the culture as well asks Shireen about her hijab, her headscarf, and she gets so outrageously offended that this character asked her about it, that that's when I had to stop reading and be like, wait a minute. I'm confused about the message of this book already,
mm-hmm.
because I'm assuming that the author is going to share her experiences so that she can break down stereotypes and the walls that currently exist between cultures and races, etc. And her angst repeatedly towards people's, like, frank, honest questions, like, obviously it's implied when this person is doing something that's genuinely bad. I mean, people throw food at her, people, like, call her names. Obviously those are bad things and should not be done. But when someone asks a question, they want to know, what is the significance of this? It's visible. We can see it. It's unique to us. Share that with us. And asking questions should never be a source of derision and your offense. I don't know. That,
yeah.
It sent a strange message to me. It taught me that as a person outside of the culture, I can't even open up the conversation or ask.
I agree.
And that immediately began to rub me the wrong way.
It's, so I'm black, and I have my hair braided, and sometimes I have my hair down in an afro. My hair is natural. And black women have the stereotype of being an angry black woman, sassy, pushy, aggressive, and that's something that I deal with on a daily basis. And a lot of times you'll see videos or people when someone asks a black woman about her hair, like, can I touch it? And they're like, no, don't touch my hair. Well, you're just playing into the stereotype that society's already given you of an angry black woman. You're not approachable. And people, most of the time, they're just curious. They have not seen a hairstyle like that. They're interested in it. And sometimes that's all it is. And it's just, you know, nice to say, oh, no, you know, when people ask to touch my hair, I'll say, well, your hand's going to be greasy if you touch it because I put a lot of product in my hair. And I say it in, you know, a cheeky way and not being mean or rude. And so when she comes across that way, it just further pushes people away and they don't want to have to deal with someone who is angry or aggressive, or and then it builds another stereotype of your race or religion.
Yeah, it was unusual. I wasn't expecting that book to take that route.
Yeah, and I think that's probably why I couldn't understand why she bothered me so much, and that's probably why. It was just her unwillingness to be informative to people who just wanted to know. I mean, I could understand her anger of the world and how people treat her, but when someone genuinely is interested in your culture or why you wear a hijab, especially right after 9/11, educate them.
Right. Yeah.
That's not difficult.
There was a point in the book where Ocean, her love interest, really is finally successful in breaking through this, like, wall that she's built up around herself, and informs her that, like, you don't understand how people see you. You think you know how people see you. And he basically tells her how people actually see her. And it blows her mind. And that was one of the only scenes in the book, really, that I was like, okay, this is going somewhere. And why I kept reading. But, and I found that theme compelling. Like, at the same time, are we aware of how people see us as we're walking through the world? I don't really know. And a lot of times, we could avoid a lot of bad situations if we were aware of ourselves, too. And so I liked that theme, but she didn't commit to it enough to really make it impactful.
Yeah.
So
I think who finally told her that she had a shitty attitude? I don't know if it was her brother, but wouldn't somebody else tell after, like, Ocean? Wasn't her brother's friend or her brother too?
Everyone in her life makes comments. Literally. Her brother's the first technically in the story to be like, you need to just relax, blah, blah, blah. Like, he has a very different attitude than her, and I think that was intentional, obviously, too, to show, like, the differences in how certain people, but, like, she chalked it up to his attractiveness, and I was like, it could also just mean that he's making different choices.
Yeah.
He has a lot of diverse friends, you know, he's doing things, he's, like, making this club. Clearly, her brother was, like, the character that, this is how you should be. Not should be, I don't like to say that, but, like, again, he's a little bit more self-aware. But ultimately, who, like, changes her mind is Ocean. Which, again, I'm not sure how I feel about.
So, that was just one problem. I didn't like the romance. It was okay. Yeah. I don't think Ocean was a particularly well-developed character. I don't think there was anything special about him. He was really into her, and he just kept on and on and on until she broke down and went out with him, and then, like I was telling Elise, it just got ridiculous. Everything that happened to him, and we probably shouldn't go into it because it is spoilers.
It's spoilery. Mm-hmm.
But it's just way over the top. And, I mean, that wasn't even my biggest problem with the book.
But again, it sends the message of, you know, her book, it's clear in her story that she's going to certain lengths to prove that the stereotype of, like, Muslim women don't have any agency is not true. Like, she's out there breakdancing. She's in school. She has career plans, more or less. She's interested. She's not really interested in romance, but she's clearly open to the idea because she's got a boyfriend. Where was I going with this? What did you just say? Oh, God. Well, sorry. Okay. John clearly wasn't listening to what I was saying.
I was.
No, I'm just kidding.
Don't know.
I'm sorry. I lost my train of thought, but had something to do with the breakdancing. Anyway, we'll move on.
Well, the breakdancing, you were talking about Ocean. But the breakdancing, which I thought was an interesting way of introducing inclusivity. I grew up around breakdancing. My brother was a breakdancer back in the 80s. And so I'm kind of familiar with the culture, and I like that she included it as it is an inclusive culture. There is a lot of different races. You know, there are dance battles, and oftentimes there's a girl group, and it's not like, ew, you're a girl, you can't beat me. They were respected, and like I said, a lot of different races, cultures. It's a whole bunch of everybody, and people don't they don't really judge because most of them are poor. And so they all kind of have the same background, and, you know, they welcome everyone. But she didn't do much with it. She hit on it a couple times, but I think if she really had stuck with it, because she was an outsider. She kept herself. She was a loner. But when she went to the dance rap battles, she found people who had a common interest, and they did not judge her for her hijab. They thought she was cool. But that's really it. Mm-hmm. They didn't really do anything with it, which I thought was a letdown.
Yeah, I wrote in my notes that, you know, she wants to show that Muslim American women can be good at things, but it was the entire process of, like, her training with her brother and his friends was so diluted by this romance that she couldn't really go anywhere else with it. Like, she split herself. It was like, this book was a romance. This book ended up being a romance, where mm-hmm. it should have been this character-driven, start-to-finish development of someone beginning to deal with and heal from anger from a very real standpoint. I mean, she was treated unfairly, and I wanted her to unpack that more, and it just became about her obsession with this dude. And I don't know if it was... No, and I wrote this note about Ocean as well. It's like, I really wanted to like him. He seemed sweet, but it's like you always say, I've read this character before. He's lonely. His mom is not in his life. She like, oh, you're a good kid, I'm gonna leave. Like, she's doing her own thing. I kept asking myself, like, why is Ocean the one that's pursuing her? Why is he different? Because he's lonely. And he, like, sees the loneliness in her, too. And I don't know, some readers might identify with that, but I wanted there to be something else. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not an easy thing. I remember, because obviously I was alive when this happened, sentiments were very anti-Middle Eastern. I remember that distinctly. So if, unfortunately, I did not go to school with any Muslim Americans, but had there been one in my class, I totally could have seen how this would have happened. And I don't know, like, being friends with that person would have taken a lot from someone. I don't know if that makes sense, but, like, what drew you to that person other than, oh, I'm lonely, they are too, let's be friends?
Or I wanted her to go she could hide that. Her headphones and her hijab. Big whoop.
Yeah.
Like, that's it.
And we can still see the cord. You're not hiding anything.
I guess she had a hoodie on. I don't know.
This is back in the day before the cordless headphones, dude. Like, yeah. I don't know.
Think about that.
Yeah. I don't know. I wanted to like this book. I do think that it is a relatively important contribution to YA literature. There's not many stories about Muslim Americans specifically. I was hoping for a stronger written story.
Oh, most definitely. That was my major issue, was the writing. It's just not the type of writing that I like.
I'm not even talking about her prose. Oh, her prose was straightforward. I don't think it needed to be flowery. That would have been trying too much, in my opinion. She needed to edit her characters better. She needed to develop her characters better. And the story needed to be different. Not different, but like,
the only thing I wanted to happen in, not the only thing, but one of the things I wanted to happen in this book is because as a non-Muslim person who sees the issues that they are facing, a point or one of the reasons why people, not one of the reasons, but what you see is how you are treated. And they see the hijab and they automatically are angry at the hijab. So as a person who is not a Muslim, I'm thinking, take it off. And that will solve a lot of your problems. So I kept waiting for her to answer the question. And she did. I appreciate her answer. I liked her answer. I don't have to. I want to wear it. I like wearing it. It's who I am. And I was like, great. That's great. But that was it. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing I liked about the book.
Yeah. She kept giving us hints of something deeper, but it never...
She does eventually say it. She really comes out and says it. And I was happy for it.
And there's another Muslim that confronts her as well. Mm-hmm. About how, like, you don't dress like a Muslim, you don't act like a Muslim, you're setting the rest of us back. Like, that's kind of what I wanted to learn more about.
Okay.
I don't know. It didn't meet my expectations.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think some people will like this book. It's getting good reviews. Some people like it. Some people don't. I was reading a bunch of reviews on Goodreads, and yeah, it's polarizing. People are comparing it to The Hate U Give, but not as popular.
It's not.
Yeah.
Okay.
Last but not least, in terms of novels.
Well, I had a couple more. Madame. I read Saco Girls by Claire Legrand, and I gave it a 3.75. And here's why, as soon as I can pull it up on my Goodreads.
Did we say our ratings for our other books?
I DNF'd two of mine. I gave Expanse of the Sea 3.5.
Yeah, that was a 3 for me, too.
A 3?
A 3.
Yikes. Okay.
3 is decent. 3 is not, I hated it. 3 is, it's good.
She always has to.
2 is like, oh.
Defend herself, and I'm like, yikes.
Because 3 for you, I think, means something a little bit more harsh.
It's horrible.
Yeah. 3 is not horrible for me.
So Saco Girls is kind of a weird YA, which I enjoy. I like weird YA. It was a very interesting book. It was a difference. There's an unremarkable girl who's grieving her father and taking care of her family. They move into this creepy old money island as caretakers. There's a biracial girl who's the town pariah and gives no fucks about anybody. Then there's a mean girl, and she's against trope because we kind of hear her inner monologue and she really kind of goes into why she's this horrible person, which is all great. And it's a magical realism because there is a monster taking girls and they don't know why. And there is an actual monster. So it's not like a metaphorical monster. It's an actual monster. So that makes it magical. It was good up until, I would say, 56% of the way in. I shut up, please.
Specific as hell. 56.55%
into the book. It's when it took a turn. And Claire Legrand she's not the type of author that just lays it all out there for you. Like, when you're beginning to read the book, you're like, is this a real monster? Is this not a real monster? She doesn't say it's a real monster. She kind of lets you figure it out on your own, which I appreciated. But at some point in the book, her writing starts to become a little cartoonish. And another good reader on Goodreads described it as the Scooby Gang, which I agree. It's like they're going after this monster, and it's the Scooby Gang, and it's just over the top. It's a little ridiculous, and it just took a turn. But it is LGBTQ+, and it's fantasy magical realism, which you don't get a lot in LGBTQ+ books. So, I mean, for that reason, it's good. The book is big as hell, so yeah, be ready. But I liked Fureborn a lot better, so I was expecting a lot, and I just didn't get it.
Yeah. Well, the last novel that I read was Kingdom of Ash by Sarah J. Maas, and you read that as well.
Yeah.
We won't say a ton about this because, again, we're going to go into a separate podcast. But this was the last book in her Throne of Glass series. So wrapping up, what is it, five years?
Yeah. No, the first one was 2012.
So 6 years of a great series. This is one of my favorite YA fantasy series. The book was okay. There were parts of it that were great. There were parts of it that were, I did some significant skimming. Which I don't usually do.
I didn't skim.
I did.
I'm lying. I did skim. I skimmed over certain people's chapters. Yep. We'll get into that in our other podcast.
But that was my biggest complaint.
I gave it a 5.
I gave it like a 4.
I thought you said 4.5.
Bumping it down to 4.
Oh,
as the emotions settle.
That's a bummer.
Yeah, it's like I did way too much skimming in that I wasn't interested.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
Yeah, it is. That's a sign.
But the entire series is great.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, and I have an issue with last books anyways. They almost never end the way I want. Not that it didn't end the way I wanted it to. I don't know. Never mind. I won't say too much else.
Okay.
It was decent. 4 is good.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was good to be done with that series.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she better not add any
good
more.
Good God.
Because she'll do that. She'll
no
be like,
prequels or
psych
sequels.
Your mind.
Or psych your mind.
It's going to be 12 books instead of 7. Let's not do that.
Good
God. All right. I think that's it.
All right.
Are we done?
You said you had more.
My last book is Bright Ruin, which is in the Gilded Cage series that no one's reading.
By Vic James.
The first two books were great. the third book, it was a bit of a letdown. And it's because, I don't know if you remember in the second book, Cillian was having this dream about, or he's having the vision about this king of with, like, horns
yeah.
or something.
Yeah.
So she explains that, and it was just not good.
I don't know why people aren't reading this series.
It's, first of all, it's an adult book.
Oh.
And at BAM, it's in the adult section.
Is that a new decision?
I don't know.
So I don't feel like we initially would have picked it up had it been...
No. And even though all the characters are...
I think
well, the main
they
characters
realize,
are teens.
Right, I think they realize, no, this isn't really a teen book, or didn't want to market it to teens anymore, which
Maybe.
Might be why the YA community is not talking about it.
But it's a great
yeah,
series.
It's wonderful.
It's an alternate universe. It's not dystopian. Well, I guess I just said it's an alternate universe. It takes place in modern times, England, but it's kind of backwards. But it's a great book.
Yeah, it's great. Really well
It's
written
one of the
story.
Best characters I've read in a really long time.
For sure.
But that ending, I want to spoil it for you so bad.
Please don't. Because I probably will still read it. I really like that series. But you know how I am with last books? Okay. So, really quickly, I'm probably the only one you will ever hear talk about graphic novels on this podcast, but I read them a lot. I review them for School Library Journal, so I read a ton. Saga Volume 9 came out this month, which, if you have been reading this book, I know some teens do,
mm-hmm.
even though it's an adult. It's like a new adult series. They're like young parents. This is one of the best series that I have ever read. This particular author slash book changed my mind about graphic novels. I didn't like them before. Never had any interest in reading them. I thought they were for nerdy middle schoolers, and that was a very ignorant opinion. This changed my mind, and now I'm obsessed with the series. So Volume 9 came out on October 2nd. Check it out. They are taking a year break, and then they're coming back with Volume 10 next year. So you have to wait a full year after that excruciating, heart-wrenching ending. We'll say no more. On the exact opposite end of the saga graphic novel spectrum is Aquacorn Cove by Katie O'Neill. She has won several awards for her work, and this is her newest book about a girl. It's kind of like it's a statement on environmentalism. It's a fantasy series, so it's like not part of our world, but she and her dad are marine biologists, or what's the word? They're trying to preserve marine life, and she comes across aquacorns and she's trying to save them. It's a very sweet story. It's more middle grade, lower teen, that came out October 16th. And then next month, watch out for Volume 5 of Paper Girls, also by Brian K. Vaughan, who writes Saga. So that's my little graphic novel corner.
Alrighty then. Well, that's all we have for this podcast. You can find our review of Kingdom of Ash in more in depth and a different podcast, so look out for that. You can follow us on iTunes Podcasts, and we'll catch you next time.